in the Silverado Squatters, published in 1883, Robert Louis Stevenson wrote, "There are no foreign lands. It is the traveler who is foreign." Welcome to A Walk Within, a show where we visit a fairy tale from around the world and revisit the life experiences invoked by it to explore the parallels between the two and find newer meanings. I'm Anoop, and in this part 2 of the mini-series, we will continue the story of the man who did not wish to die, a Japanese fairy tale from Yei Theodora Ozaki, as well as the memory of my journey to success. As always, we will start with the story, followed by the memory, once we are back. In answer to your prayer, however, I will help you in another way. I will send you to the country of perpetual life, where death never comes, where the people live forever. Saying this, Chofuku put into Sentaro's hand a little crane made of paper, telling him to sit on its back and it would carry him there. Sentaro obeyed wonderingly. The crane grew large enough for him to ride on it with comfort. It then spread its wing, rose high in the air, and flew away over the mountains, right out to sea. Sentaro was at first quite frightened, but by degrees he grew accustomed to the swift flight through the air. On and on, they went for thousands of miles. The bird never stopped for rest or food, but as it was a paper bird, it doubtless did not require any nourishment. And strange to say, neither did Sentaro. After several days, they reached an island. The crane flew some distance inland and then alighted. As soon as Sentaro got down from the bird's back, the crane folded up of its own accord and flew into his pocket. Now Sentaro began to look about him wonderingly, curious to see what the country of perpetual life was like. He walked first round about the country and then through the town. Everything was, of course, quite strange and different from his own land, but both the land and the people seemed prosperous. So he decided that it would be good for him to stay there and took up lodging at one of the hotels. The proprietor was a kind man, and when Sentaro told him that he was a stranger and had come to live there, he promised to arrange everything that was necessary with the governor of the city concerning Sentaro's sojourn there. He even found a house for his guest, and in this way, Sentaro obtained the great wish and became a resident in the country of perpetual life. Within the memory of all the islanders, no man had ever died there, and sickness was a thing unknown. Priests had come over from India and China and told them of a beautiful country called Paradise, where happiness and bliss and contentment fill all the man's hearts, but its gates could only be reached by dying. This tradition was handed down for ages, from generation to generation, but none knew exactly what death was except that it led to paradise. Quite unlike Sentaro and other ordinary people, instead of having a great dread of death, they all, both rich and poor, longed for it as something good and desirable. They were all tired of their long, long lives and longed to go to the happy land of contentment called Paradise, of which the priests had told them centuries ago. All this Sentaro soon found out by talking to the islanders. He found himself, according to his ideas, in the land of topsy-turvydom. Everything was upside down. He had wished to escape from dying. He had come to the land of perpetual life with great relief and joy, only to find that the inhabitants themselves, doomed never to die, would consider it bliss to find death. What he had hitherto considered poison, these people ate as good food. And all the things to which he had been accustomed as food, they rejected. Whenever any merchants from other countries arrived, the rich people rushed to them, eager to buy poisons. These they swallowed eagerly, hoping for death to come so that they might go to paradise. But what were deadly poisons in other lands were without effect in this strange place, and people who swallowed them with the hope of dying only found that in a short time they felt better in health instead of worse. Vainly, they tried to imagine what death could be like. The wealthy would have given all their money and all their goods if they could but shorten their lives to 200 or 300 years even. Without any change, to live on forever seemed to these people wearisome and sad. In the chemist shop, there was a drug which was in constant demand, because after using it for 100 years, it was supposed to turn their hair slightly gray and to bring about disorders of the stomach. Sentaro was astonished to find that the poisonous glowfish was served up in the restaurant as a delectable dish, and hawkers in the street went about selling sauces made of Spanish flies. He never saw anyone ill after eating these horrible things, nor did he ever see anyone with as much as cold. Sentaro was delighted. He said to himself that he would never grow tired of living, and that he considered it profane to wish for death. He was the only happy man on the island. For his part, he wished to live thousands of years and to enjoy life. He set himself up in business, and for the present, never even dreamed of going back to his native land. My favorite observation from this part is this. What was called the country of perpetual life, Sentaro found it to be a strange land of topsy-turvydom. We will dive deeper for analysis in the next part, but let's jump right back into the memory. After a 3-year-long journey, a bus carrying me, Rocky, and the classmate has now entered into the city of Indore, where whole atmosphere felt large and full of possibilities. Like our ambitions, the buildings were tall. We are here. At bus stand, we met Rocky's elder brother, who promptly inquired about the security of the money. A large sum in the hands of naive youngsters was his biggest worry. He then proceeded to plan our day. First, we will have to go to the Institute of Company Secretaries of India's local chapter and register for the exam. If we are lucky, we will get our study material right there, but if not, it will be delivered to our houses in 2 to 3 weeks. After that, we will go to the academy and register for the badge. Post-enrollment, we will have to walk probably a mile to a nearby lodge named Moon's Abbey, where we will get a room and live there for next 2 to 3 days till we find a better accommodation. The classmate inquired about the food. The brother assured us that as soon as we have an address, he will get the tiffin service started. When I asked about eating today, he laughed and said, "You are in Indore. There are tons of options available anywhere you go." We stuck to the plan and went to the chapter. Purely from the looks of it, it did not feel like an official building of something which is related to a great career. We proceeded to register for the foundation exam. The admission officer verified our documents and handed us 2 forms while notifying that they had only 1 set of study material, Rocky took that set, and it was agreed to be used collectively till we get ours. We left the chapter with a sense of euphoria, for we have finally started the journey to a successful life. We celebrated this with baked samosa, a savory puff pastry, which I instantly fell in love with. Shortly after we arrived at the academy, and the whole thing started to feel surreal. The academy was on the fourth floor of a huge commercial office building. By the time we reached fourth floor, we were lost. Thankfully, an office guard noticed our seemingly heavy backpacks and without even asking, pointed us in the right direction. While reaching the academy, there was a rush of students which all looked extremely intelligent. There was laughter in some of the small groups, and in some, we noticed a deep focus on the study while sitting on the stairs outside of the office. The academy admission office was swanky. There were more officials, and the application form was a single page. In moments of awe and overwhelming environment, we proceeded to complete the formality, including handing over the cash for the badge. We were given a fancy receipt that we had to carry with us every day and a printed class and time schedule, which felt like we got our money's worth in that moment. Studying in government school all my life, it felt like a novelty. We carefully kept it in our backpack and left the offices. This time, the celebration had much less fervor to it. We just parted ways with significant cash and the upcoming stress of study and fear of competing with many unknown and seemingly intelligent students took place in our heart and mind. Nevertheless, beloved baked samosa was waiting outside to comfort us. Upon reaching Moon's Abbey, we found it to be an old building on top of a couple local shops. The entrance had a board announcing cheap rates. Suffice to say, we couldn't find another place which allowed us and was in our budget. So Moon's Abbey became our address. Our first day at the academy was upon us. We were nervously excited while taking the steps to the academy again. We inquired at the office about where the accounting class is and were promptly asked to follow an individual who turned out to be an inspector of receipts before allowing us into a huge room with at least 10 rows of benches. There was a green board in the room, which we had not seen earlier in our collective lives. We were more of a blackboard kind of simpletons who heard about the existence of whiteboards. We noticed that students filling the class were all talking in English and felt like they all knew each other. Predictively, we decided to take the last two rows and found ourselves in the company of two more guys who shared the similar nervousness. Upon introducing ourselves, we noticed a sudden sense of relief on their faces. The class was about to start, and here comes our teacher wearing a collar mic. A nonchalant gentleman who was wearing a white shirt and a black pant almost covered in chalk powder. He welcomed us to the class and jumped right into the accounting book. It was all in English, but all three of us were pretty good in accounting and were able to follow him without much difficulty. The next 45 minutes went smoothly and the class ended. Here comes the next teacher. He was wearing a color-matched navy blue turban, tie, and pants, and a white shirt with barely visible blue lines. With his smooth voice, he introduced himself to be a marketing manager of an international pharmaceutical company who enjoys educating young minds and thus take few hours out of his workday to teach here. We were hypnotized. He proceeded to talk about demand and supply curve. Now this time, the subject matter was hard to follow in English. We can make sense of few words here and there, but it was almost impossible to keep pace with him. We found ourselves to be in similar situation with language in other classes that followed. After a long day and information overloaded brains, we left the classroom and reached Moon's Abbey. A few minutes went by and the conversation was all about how we are in deep trouble. We don't know the language enough. While the study material is all in English, we need to understand the subject first. If we understand the basic concepts, we can then build on top of it. Staying positive, we decided that raising this language concern with teachers is the best way forward. Next day, after the accounting class, we rushed to stop the teacher before the next class starts. He was already surrounded by a few eager students with books and notepads in hand, asking quick questions. We chickened out of that situation and came back to the class blaming each other for being a coward. We agreed to ask the economics teacher after the class. Similar to accounting teacher, he too was surrounded by inquiring students. We waited for him to start walking and then rushed to him and politely asked, "Hello sir, we came from this town and are all from Hindi language educational background. Would you mind explaining the key concepts in Hindi?" He took a pause and told us, "See, if I start explaining in Hindi, 90% of the class won't understand it and will lose focus. I also can't create a class only for Hindi-speaking students, as frankly, I don't have that much time, nor do I believe we have that many students to fill a class. Since you guys took this huge step for your career, you need to work hard to do better and start learning English as well." "But how can we learn English overnight?" I blurted out. "I'm not expecting you to learn it overnight, but you have to start somewhere. Here is something for you to try. You should buy both Hindi and English versions of Chanda Mama, a magazine for children publishing magical stories, and read the English version out loud. Wherever you get stuck, look in the Hindi version and you will be able to follow the story in English." He walked away, leaving us thinking, "So now we have to read one more book." We did, however, follow his advice and added Chanda Mama to our daily readings. It was a fun exercise and to our surprise, did the trick. Days, weeks, and few months went by and we were improving. By this time, we made few English-speaking friends as well and were doing really good in our periodic assessments, like the classmate scored highest in company law test. The daily routine of getting ready early, attending the class, coming back to room, revise what we have learned, and study what will be discussed tomorrow started feeling more like muscle memory than a deliberate effort. Eagerly waiting for the food to arrive with curiosity as to what we are going to eat today was one of the highlights of the day. We created a small community of fellow students at the Moon's Abbey as well, and things were going good. This is it, right? Sentaro has become the happiest man on the island, and parallelly, things were going good with us. In both the worlds, however superficial they are, the desires were met. So what happens next? Does Sentaro live eternally and all three of us become successful? You will find out in the next episode, the final part of this mini-series. If you like this content, be sure to subscribe and rate the show. And if not, please share your valuable feedback to make it better. You can do so on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, or on the show's website, awalkwithinpodcast.com. Before you go, I want to thank all the listeners for continuing to support the show. Till next time, stay as awesome as you are.